Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everybody and welcome to episode 159 of Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. And in today's show, Kelvin discusses must-read marketing books with James Carson of Bauer Media. All coming up in Internet Marketing.
So I'm joined on the line by James Carson, who works for Bauer Media, which are one of the biggest media companies in the UK. They're probably best known for some of their magazines, magazines like Grazia, Closer, Heat, FHM, all the great music magazines as well. And James kind of works for them on their websites and kind of making sure that they do well from a content and SEO point of view. But I'm talking to James today about some of the kind of digital marketing books that he's read recently that he thinks that digital marketers could probably benefit from reading. Is there any kind of, what was kind of your favourite book, James, at the moment, you think that most people should kind of go out and have a read of?
It's difficult to say because there's quite a broad range that I've read. Depends really what you're after. I think in the content side, something like the Yahoo Style Guide, although it's really thick and long, is really quite excellent for kind of just getting the basics, because I think a lot of people, when they start digital content, kind of just go in with a kind of prose or offline approach, where that style guide really clarifies what you should really do when you're starting out writing for the web. So I think that's a great guide.
And in terms of what are some of the kind of the key takeaways that you took then from that, you know, the mistakes that people who perhaps if they're used to writing online tend to make when they're, they're used to writing offline that they tend to make when moving online, that book would help you kind of deal with?
Yeah, there's quite a lot of things that seem quite basic, but it's like omitting needless words, but then also just trimming down paragraphs like relentlessly until they're like three lines long, and not having long prose paragraphs. Make sure you break a lot of stuff into lists, and then just rules around things like hyperlinking. It's amazing how many people do get it wrong when they first start out.
And do you think the kind of like, is that something that, because I suppose in your day job, a lot of what you're doing is trying to encourage those people who are used to writing for the kind of the magazine format to make that move online. How do they find that as kind of journalists making that move rather than kind of, I suppose, like many of the listeners, web marketers who are kind of copywriters as well?
That's pretty much why I read that book, just to get clarity on what online style should be. And yeah, it certainly happens that offline journalists, print journalists, certainly when they come onto online, it takes a bit of a while to get used to, because you know if you've been an offline journalist all your life, you really focus on writing prose copy, then that goes to a sub-ed. You don't really need to be concerned about the range of skills that need to be executed when you're online.
And I know kind of like you're kind of a big fan of some of the Seth Godin books as well, because we've actually interviewed Seth Godin previously for the show. Is there kind of any of those that you think that you'd kind of particularly recommend that people should kind of be looking into for 2012?
Yeah, I'd say permission marketing is kind of the old one and probably the most practical. Applying it for originally written for email, but now for kind of social media age, it's so relevant. I found Tribes and Purple Cow largely have quite similar messages, and Godin does have this interesting agenda, but I think often he dismisses traditional media as kind of some sort of wasteful marketing medium, which I don't necessarily agree with, but certainly permission marketing and Purple Cow are well worth a read.
Have you tried any of his more recent kind of domino books, the shorter form ones that he's been working on with Amazon? That are kind of, because the problem I've got, I love Seth Godin's books, and I find the ideas of them always kind of quite helpful and, you know, good at kind of, they're quite motivational, if you know what I mean. But I sometimes find that, particularly some of the older ones that were some of the longer form ones, it feels like, to some extent, the book's being kind of extended to look like it's a decent thickness, whereas he probably could have, you know, there's some omission there that could have been made in that writing. Have you tried any of those shorter ones?
No, actually. I read Lynchpin and I got very much that impression. And that's actually one of the only books that I've read in the last year that I've given up on because the message was so similar.
Yeah, I do find that one. I'm literally trying to remember the name of the book that was the one that I read most recently, if that one, but I honestly can't remember it off the top of my head. But in terms of kind of those more general marketing books, you know, kind of that marketing strategy ones, is there any of those that you think that perhaps are kind of all-time classics that perhaps people might have heard of, but, you know, maybe haven't actually got around to reading, that you think is really worth going to the effort of kind of reading the full book rather than kind of the prose?
But for more general stuff, let's say Building Strong Brands by David Acker, that is quite a testing read. He goes, it's quite a technical way of putting marketing, but it is really brilliant, and he gives some amazing examples. He just knows the subject so well that you come out of it feeling, you know, thinking quite differently. And then a similar one to that is Positioning by Al Rees and Jack Trout.
Okay, yeah, I've got that on my Kindle wish list. I haven't quite got down to downloading that. Is it well worth a read on that front?
Yeah, thankfully it's a bit easygoing style as well. They're quite amusing as writers, and they kind of you know, rip into companies that have done it all wrong. But it's a similar sort of book to Building Strong Brands, but just a bit easier to read, and really fascinating to kind of understand how to think of markets and where to position your product against the market leader, and how success is made through those tactics. And then I think the third one is, it's not really a book about marketing, but it is brilliant, The Tipping Point, How Little Things Can Make a Big Difference. It's a really important book for marketing to read, I think, just because it lays down a few rules that, if you know, applied, can be really relevant for things like viral video, like SEO and link bait, and social media sort of virality. So I think it's really worth a read.
Yeah, because that talks a lot about it's a Malcolm Gladwell book, isn't it? It talks a lot about how kind of trends and patterns develop and spread, and he kind of talks about fashions, but there's all kinds of takeaways to that for content, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, probably the main takeaway for me is that when we produce something, often it's thought that if we get that out to as many people as possible, then that's the way that, you know, ideas spread very, very quickly. But Gladwell kind of finds that idea on his head and actually says, you know, it's the law of the few that really makes a difference. So if you reach the people that really matter, who are kind of extraordinary, then they'll do the work for you. So there's an innovation curve, and appealing to most people isn't always the best initial strategy. But something that Godin talks about in Purple Cow as well.
And that's kind of the idea of the maven, isn't it, I suppose, is the way that he tends to label them, isn't it, from my recollections on that front. So they're particular people who are perhaps exert kind of an undue influence on the spread of ideas.
Yeah.
And,
he uses an example about Paul Revere in the American Revolution, who kind of kicked off when the British were marching on Boston, and he managed to do a horse ride up around all the villages and get his connections all on board. So they raised the militia and managed to defeat the British. So it's a really, really interesting sort of just backstory that works today.
There's an interesting actual kind of flip side to that as well, because I've certainly kind of got that impression that some of the examples in Malcolm Gladwell's very good at kind of taking like lots of ideas and bringing them together into a kind of coherent whole and a coherent sort of idea of a whole book. And I've heard kind of some of the examples that he used multiple times in, you know, various different books. But one that I've read a little while ago, probably about 12 months ago, that kind of challenges some of the points made in Tipping Point. Not completely, but kind of takes a slightly different perspective. It's by a guy called Mark Earls, called Herd. And he's recently written a kind of second book, which I've not read yet, called I'll Have What She's Having, which kind of makes an interesting argument that whilst there are certain people in the examples he talks about that do have perhaps a greater influence than others, it talks about the kind of idea that the way that we think about influence is perhaps... he thinks a little naive, really. He talks a lot about kind of the idea of kind of copying and, you know, unaware copying that kind of people tend to make decisions on as well. And some really interesting analogies in that. And this was written kind of before the London riots of last summer. But there's a whole chapter in there about kind of how riots tend to spread, as it were. And the fact that actually a lot of the thinking that perhaps Malcolm Gladwell would talk about in Tipping Point doesn't really always work in that way, which I think is quite interesting as well.
Right.
But yeah, well worth having a read of that one as well. So in terms of, you know, how you kind of go about digesting this content, because I know I'm a big fan of reading long form books as opposed to blog copy, because I think sometimes the nature of a, you know, even a really good blog post is that it's kind of, you never kind of fully immersed in it in the same way you are. But do you think, like, digital marketers as a whole don't really pay enough attention and you know, read enough kind of books, as it were, because, you know, perhaps there's kind of an anticipation that they'll be out of date, as it were?
I don't know if that's necessarily true. I'd hope it isn't, and that marketers do think about reading books as well as blogs. I always find with blogs that, you know, they're normally one idea, and I never really read a whole blog. I just don't have the attention span. And you normally sort of do it while you see a tweet and then you click it and then you realise you've got to get back to work. So it's not, I don't really digest it in the same way. And when you take a book, you know, that actually, for me, it forms like just a bit more in my head. And I think worrying about books being out of date is kind of, it's a bit of a moot point, because most of the books that I've read this year are, you know, 4 or 5 years old. And yeah. I don't think you should be too concerned about the technology. It's more about the methods of marketing. And books like The Clue Train Manifesto, that was written, you know, in the 90s, and The One-to-One Future was written about 1993. Yet, I think they're probably the two best books on the internet, that certainly that I've read, just for explaining the concepts of marketing.
I suppose people don't change, do they? And the way that people are, you know, why people make decisions doesn't change, does it? So I suppose,
no.
Yes,
it's just the practical execution of the ideas expressed in the book. Probably need a blog post to explain them, or you might be working a lot on Facebook, and so reading a book like The One to make something really tick and then give you an idea that you can execute.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, because I don't know if you've seen recently, The Guardian seems to be experimenting with this a bit, where they're kind of taking and producing like shorts, like Kindle Shorts, for one of them. They're not Kindle Shorts, because that's kind of a brand name, but kind of short books published exclusively for the Kindle, which are perhaps kind of that fall some way short of what would be a book traditionally, but kind of would be a very long kind of feature article, as it were, kind of, you know, 10,000, 15,000 words, as it were, and publishing them as sort of short one-off books around particular topics that they can turn around relatively quickly. So, for example, I think the London riots were one that they've done one on, and that type of thing, where they can take content that just the normal kind of publishing cycle wouldn't be able to deal with the kind of topicalness of that. Do you think that's an interesting model for publishers to be pursuing?
It sounds interesting. I don't know if it's commercially viable for publishers. I wouldn't know too much about that, but it sounds a lot like, you know, university journal writing, because,
yeah,
you know, a lot, you know, I studied English and history, and a lot of the stuff that you have to read is 10 to 15,000 word journal entries. And they still really work to help you form ideas. So, yeah, I think that's a good way to go. On the internet, you're one extreme, or there's a book, and to have like journals or ebooks. Most ebooks I find are kind of just marketing messages and quite generic by companies, but some out there that are really good, such as yours.
Oh, kind words there, kind words. But yeah, no, it's an interesting one because that is, again, it's that sort of duration that's, it's too long to be a blog post. It's just, that started out as a blog post and it just kind of got to like 5,000 words. And I was like, I'm only scratching the surface of what I want to get at here. And that just wouldn't work in a blog post format because it is that kind of, like you say, there's the blog post, it's the distractions, isn't it? So it's the kind of difficulty of dealing with it on that point of view. But having said that, so I have had, when I've been publishing blog posts, it's amazing that if you kind of go over, like, most blog posts I tend to read are kind of 500 to 800 words. So it's, if you can go over 1,000, suddenly you get a load more tweets. If you go over 1,500, it then gets even more again. And it does seem to be that there's actually, you know, it's not a stunt, but you can kind of, you know, particularly in the internet marketing world, you can get a lot of attention if you write something that's long form rather than some of the shortest.
Yeah, I've recently written one that was 2,500 words on SEO Gadget. And yeah, I got a great response, but I'm always kind of cautious that, of how much people actually read, because I did get some tweet responses that were sort of like they clearly hadn't read it, and they were sort of just like, you know, challenging me with points that I'd made in the blog post. So you've always got to be aware of that as a writer, and not kind of fall down the hole of getting too touchy, because you know, I write a blog and it's quite clear in the comments that not everyone reads it with the same sort of interpretation as well. And yeah, that's sometimes a danger, because you could just be like, you know, what are you talking about?
And for some of the kind of magazines that you work with, clearly there's going to be a process that the journalists have their own content generation process and content strategy. But clearly there's going to be topics that you could see from an SEO perspective and kind of a social media perspective would be kind of valuable topics to cover. How have you kind of managed the process of kind of encouraging, you know, is there a suspicion of writing content just for search engines, even if it is good for readers, but the idea for that content came from what searchers are looking
for? Well, most of what we do is very consumer facing, so we don't really get concerned about kind of just doing it for search engines. But the trick is to make sure you basically put as many keywords and titles and things as possible, really.
Yeah.
It's not rocket science, but it's something that the Daily Mail have really done well. Is that, you know, if they look at their headlines, you know, they're up to three or four lines long sometimes. And, yeah, you know, that just would never happen in a magazine. Literally in a magazine, you would see what Katie did next or something like that, talking about Katie and Russell Brand. And you'd get that straight away because, you know, there's a picture. But then online, you know, you just got to make sure that everything's like super contextual. And I think if you add, you know, who, what, why, when, how, they're pretty much fundamentals of journalism, but you've really got to stick to them online and then just apply that in headlines and into copy, then you're most of the way there for getting SEO quite right. Just in consumer publishing.
Thanks very much for your time, James. Really appreciate that. And hopefully there's plenty of books there that if people haven't read already, that they can go out and have a read of now as well.
Indeed. Well, thanks, Kelvin.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150. And you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.